From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Monday, November 6, 2017. And on this day, Atlantic bluefin tuna populations off the New England coast seem to have rebounded. So what's next for the super valuable fish? And we'll visit a get-together between recent immigrants and longtime residents of Lewiston and Auburn. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, presenting Gardens Aglow, where visitors will see the gardens in a whole new light. Tickets available at MaineGardens.org.
Fishermen up and down the New England coast say it's been decades since they've been able to catch so many Atlantic bluefin tuna so fast. Once severely depleted, populations of the prized sushi fish appear to be rebuilding. Now the industry and some scientists say the international commission that regulates the fish can allow a much bigger catch. But some environmental groups disagree. Fred Bever has our story.
Peter Speeches is a commercial fisherman who sails his 45-foot boat, the Erin and Sarah, out of a Portland marina. His rods and reels are dry now, though, and the boat's been docked the past several weeks. That's because tuna fishermen reached their fall catch quotas earlier than ever this year.
There was more fish here than I've seen in 30 years, and I fish virtually every single day. This year we caught probably close to the same amount, but in half the time that we normally fish.
This year, Speeches says, the 1,000-plus boats that fish bluefin off New England were blessed by day after day of good boating weather. Forage fish, such as herring and pogies, showed up in numbers, and they swam relatively near to shore, bringing the big tuna in to feast, where smaller boats could get at them pretty easily. Above all, he says, there were just a whole lot of bluefin around, and biting.
They're everywhere. When they hit this year in July, they hit from the Canadian border virtually to New Jersey. They were thick, and they got caught fast.
And fisheries scientists agree. After charting a strong bluefin presence in 2016, preliminary data for this year suggest even better.
The increase has been just incredible. Just incredible.
Walter Golay is a researcher at the Gulf of Maine Research Institute. He compares the recent trend to big drop-offs seen a decade ago.
And then since that time, they started to show up a little bit earlier in the season, to the point now where they've shown up in abundance. So we're almost back to where we were, or it appears like we're almost back to where we were in the 1990s.
It's really difficult to say clearly what environmental changes could have led to this current increase in abundance.
That's Clay Porch, a federal scientist who leads bluefin stock assessments for the International Commission for the Conservation of Atlantic Tuna, or ICAT. That's the body that's been setting quotas in a 20-year effort to rebuild two bluefin stocks, those caught in the eastern Atlantic and those caught here on the west side. Bluefin are a big, fast, warm-blooded fish that can swim from the Bahamas to Norway in 54 days. Porch says that charting their locations and numbers is an exercise in predicting the unpredictable. But the trend lines are clear, he adds. Recovery efforts since 2010 are showing some real success.
They've really taken a lot of steps to get better control in the fisheries and catch bigger fish instead of a lot of small fish, and ratcheted down those quotas. So the combination of all those things has really created an environment where the stock can increase. And now that it's increased, we're saying, well, it looks like you can start taking more quota again.
The scientists say that starting next year, to avoid an undue risk of overfishing, the Western quota should not be increased by more than 25%. But even that much would raise the quotas to the highest level they've been in 15 years. Fishermen like Peter Speeches are all for it.
I think we have to recognize that we have made sacrifices as New England fishermen that have paid great dividends, and we shouldn't be punished for it.
But conservation groups are dismayed by the prospect. Shana Miller, who directs the Ocean Foundation's Western Atlantic Bluefin Program, says that in order to continue the stock's recovery, the quota actually should be reduced. If the 25% increase is adopted, she says, the data show the stock would start declining again within 3 years.
And then we'll be in a case where ICAT will be facing its first ever failed recovery plan.
And Miller makes a larger point. Even if recovery targets are met, the entire management effort is still geared to maintaining stock levels that are at best a fifth of their historic levels.
If you go back 50 years, you get a completely different story. And that's when you realize how depleted the stock is.
There are two major strains of Atlantic bluefin, those that spawn in the Mediterranean and those that spawn in the Gulf of Mexico. The Mediterranean strain is roughly 10 times as abundant as those spawned off this continent and is considered more robust. But when they cross the Atlantic to feed off American shores, they mix in with the locals, making it very difficult to judge just how well the Western population is faring. There is some work being done on that.
What we're going for is right in here. You can see that thicker part where it turns into the thin piece of the otolith.
Portland's Gulf of Maine Research Institute houses the hemisphere's largest collection of a tiny tuna bone called an otolith. Researcher Brenda Rudnicki preps a sample that will be used to discern the fish's spawning year, its sex, and depending on the presence of certain isotopes and minerals, which side of the sea it was born in.
So that's the part of the otolith that we're going to take. So we're going to make two cuts, one before that and one after that. And that's what we put on these slides to work with.
The Institute scientists are using otoliths to develop data and models that should open a new window on the true size and health of the two Atlantic bluefin populations. But the international body hasn't adopted that work yet. So when the ICAT decides quotas at a meeting that begins next week in Marrakesh, to some degree, their assessments will remain beset by uncertainty. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
For the past several weeks, new Mainers have been breaking bread with longtime residents of Lewiston and Auburn, swapping stories about their families and breaking down stereotypes about immigrants and refugees. It's part of a national initiative to address the uptick in hate crimes. As Susan Sharon reports, one focus of the sessions is to teach bystanders how to safely intervene in a bias incident before it escalates.
Building relationships with strangers doesn't happen on an empty stomach, so part of each conversation involves a meal. In this case, it's a Somali potluck dinner featuring a savory pastry called sambusa, served up in the basement of the Community Concepts building in Lewiston. This is just one of nearly 20 facilitated discussions that wraps up this month. Each group meets twice, and their discussions span several hours and cover provocative themes about race, religion, and prejudice, like the misperception that anyone from Somalia is a terrorist.
No, we're not terrorists. As a matter of fact, she said terrorists attacks everybody equally. They harm equally all the Muslim people. So.
Fawzia Musi of Lewiston translates for Ayan Ali, one of several Somali women taking part in the group.
As a matter of fact, she said, I don't even think we're terrorists and we have the same religion or beliefs. I don't think they're normal people either. It costs us a lot of
grief.
I would like the world to eradicate all terrorists because they cost us a lot of grief.
Facilitator Steve Wessler has the group discuss several other stereotypes about new Americans, that they're lazy, don't want to work, and are all on welfare. And then Wessler, with help from the group itself, breaks them down one by one.
Are these accurate about new Americans being lazy?
My experience is no.
Glenn Holmes is the Director of Economic Development for Community Concepts Finance Corporation and a native Mainer who lives in Buckfield.
I mean, some of the most hardworking, dedicated people I've met have been new Mainers.
They take the jobs that the other people feel they're too good for.
But Tara Saunders says one of the reasons she's participating in the discussion is that she has a lot to learn about how refugees and new immigrants receive aid. She says other people she knows don't understand that either.
And so therefore, we put our own assumptions. And I think what most people need to be is to be much better informed to understand what the aid is.
One of Wessler's exercises involves arming members of the group with statistics about the type of aid immigrants receive from the government, how much they contribute to the economy, and their rate of home ownership. He's been doing civil rights and conflict resolution work in Maine and around the world for more than 25 years. This project, funded by a small grant in partnership with the Maine Council of Churches and the Maine People's Alliance, is similar to one he did about a decade ago.
And I think things got better in Lewiston, and then I think there's been somewhat of a going backwards, perhaps. There is a lot more anti-immigrant, anti-refugee bias.
Between 2015 and 2016, the Maine Department of Public Safety reported a 5% increase in the number of hate crimes in Maine. But since last year, there's been a documented increase in the number of bias-motivated incidents of harassment and violence targeting Muslims, Jews, members of the LGBT community, and immigrants across the country. And so, Wessler says, the way to reduce that is not only to confront stereotypes, but to teach people how to speak up and to respectfully intervene when they hear a degrading comment or see a possible bias-motivated incident unfolding. He uses the example of a woman who intervened on behalf of a 16-year-old Somali girl named Sarah.
She had gone to the laundromat with her mother to wash the clothes. It's the winter and people are coming in with dirty snow on their shoes and the floor was not clean.
The story goes that when Sarah turned away to get some more quarters to fill the dryer, a white woman came over, took the clothes out, dumped them on the dirty floor, and started kicking them around.
She was saying things like, "We don't want you here. Go back to Somalia." And then she felt a tap on her shoulder. In her words, she looked up and saw a white-haired white woman. And the woman said, "I'm so sorry that woman did that, but she doesn't represent everybody. Many of us are so glad that you are here."
And then the woman helped Sarah pick up the clothes to be washed a second time. And while Sarah walked over to her mother to get some more quarters, the woman paid for the load of wash and quietly left the laundromat. Wessler says that when Sarah looked back on what happened, she put her hands to her chest and said, "That woman healed my heart." It's a kind of healing that works both ways for members of the groups.
I have heard the stereotypes. I have not necessarily addressed them. I think my silence says a lot. I'm eager to learn more.
Claire Hebert of Turner is among those who says she's been forced to consider her failure to speak up for her new Somali neighbors, in part because of a lack of understanding about their culture. But at her first meeting, after hearing examples of some of the disparaging, disrespectful comments made to Somali students at Lewiston High School read aloud, Hebert said she was so upset, she got up and approached the Somali women in her group.
There was like no single word that I could think of that would make up for the words they were hearing. So I knelt down and I bowed to them and said, "Please forgive us."
Afterward, Hebert says, the Somali women came up and embraced her one at a time. No translation needed. Supporters of the initiative known as Communities Against Hate hope that the message and the training can be replicated in other parts of Maine. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Monday, November 6, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.